Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Graham Flanagan of Business Insider. Ben Flanagan of AL.com.
Hey, Graham, what's up?
Hey, Ben.
Hey, so I just, a little while ago, got out of seeing the brand new Sofia Coppola movie, The Beguiled, which is still playing in a semi-wide release. Since it's in Alabama, then it must be at least semi-wide. And it's obviously her adaptation of the Don Siegel Civil War set movie starring Clint Eastwood from 1971 that I think still maintains that very specific Sofia Coppola style, even if it's a remake. And Graham, you and I have been big fans of Sofia Coppola, but I think you're probably maybe an even bigger fan. You've been there with her from the start. You've been very emphatic with your praise in terms of her movies like Lost in Translation, obviously, and Marie Antoinette, and I know you're a big fan of The Virgin Suicides, and pretty much top to bottom a big Sofia Coppola fan, but you walked out of it recently, and you shared some pretty heavy and, again, emphatic initial praise of this new movie, The Beguiled. Could you sort of reiterate what you love about this movie?
Yeah, I mean, I love Sofia Coppola. I'm a huge fan of hers. I love a lot of her movies, really like all of them at least. And the thing about The Beguiled that was so great to me was that, yes, it's another great Sofia Coppola movie, but she has, up until this point, not made such a departure from what you might call her typical style. And which I think there's definitely been a sort of self-aware element, a meta element to her movies, a sort of emo element to all of them. And with this, other than the fact that the movie is about a group of female characters, and there is a male character, obviously, we'll get to that, but other than the fact that it focuses on a group of female characters, the tone, the style, the story itself, all completely different, and she nails it. And it's just it's an airtight 90-minute thriller with tons of suspense and horror and humor as well. And she just nails it, and she just proves that she has what it takes to be sort of like a Ron Howard type director or Spielberg type director, where you can just kind of take on any genre while still maintaining a personal style that is identifiable just through visuals or tone. And I think that this is just a big step for her to kind of say, look, I can make a Civil War set horror movie if I want to. I can do anything. And I knew she was capable of it, and she proved it here.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to be hearing any rumors about Sofia Coppola taking over Star Wars projects in the vein of Ron Howard, even after seeing The Beguiled here. But you're right, she is showing a lot of versatility as a filmmaker in terms of hopping from setting to setting, genre to genre, time period to time period. She goes as far back as the Civil War, or as far back as the story set in the story of Marie Antoinette, or she can make modern masterpieces like Lost in Translation or movies as good as Somewhere. So you're right. She's really versatile, even though I think a lot of people want to sort of like pin her into a very specific corner in terms of how she very specifically makes her movies. And she has a very, very unique style that is identifiable. And I think that's the case with The Beguiled. But Graham, I just want to go back just a little bit in the point I kind of wanted you to make. I'm looking at your tweet. You saw this movie a week ago, and your tweet right after you saw it, I'm going to read it back to you. You said, "The Beguiled is incredible. It's an airtight Southern Gothic horror masterpiece. I think it might be Sofia Coppola's best movie."
Yeah.
So because do you still feel that way?
Absolutely. I mean, she's every movie she's done has been a step in this direction, and she's gotten better and better. Some people might argue that Somewhere and Bling Ring aren't as good as the movies that she made prior to those, but there's still a lot to be appreciated with both of those movies. But I think that this just shows a mastery of storytelling, of being able to direct actors. Gosh, I mean, the performances in this are all awesome, the kids especially. I mean, she's great with actors. The story, obviously, the setting, she knows how to how to create an atmosphere and a world. And so she just nailed it in every way. And I think that she is just hitting on all cylinders. And I think that it's safe to say that this is her strongest effort. It can, and also, I'd commend her for stepping away and, you know, not making another like self-aware movie about, you know, the Hollywood malaise. She's done three of those with Lost in Translation, Bling Ring, and Somewhere. I mean, she took a complete departure here and was just like, let me just find a random novel and adapt it, which was a movie, and remake it and make it my own. So I think it just shows an evolution for her. It's awesome. It's exciting. Because I remember being so pumped about her in 2003 with Lost in Translation, and just to be here, 14 years later, and to be, I'm just as, if not more, excited about what she's just done and what she will do in the future. That's pretty awesome. She's delivered.
Oh, she's still appointment viewing as a filmmaker. I mean, when she has a new movie, it's a must-see in the theater for me. And we should note that the original movie from 1971 is currently available on HBO Go, so you can go watch that right now if you're an HBO Go subscriber.
And I haven't seen it yet.
Or have an HBO Go subscriber's password, of course. But look, I think that this is a big improvement over The Bling Ring, which I found even slighter, or it's definitely the slightest thing she's done. And I think that The Beguiled is slight, to emphasize that word, just to an extent. But I think that The Bling Ring it's not only her weakest film to date, but really so thematically weak, and beneath a filmmaker as rich as Sofia Coppola was up to that point. I think The Beguiled brings back that thematic depth that we'd seen in Lost in Translation and Marie Antoinette, and even Somewhere, just like those films, this kind of explores that familiar Coppola theme of loneliness and I guess repression to an extent. You'll find that in some of her other movies, obviously Virgin Suicide is something that explores that too. Loneliness you'll find there as well. So I'm glad to see her revisiting familiar territory in such a different way. I mean, it's one of, she's playing to a big strength of hers. And I think while a lot of the loneliness in this movie specifically, it's obviously built in and it's understood just by knowing the time and place in which the story takes place. I just think it's such a crisp running time. You mentioned 90 minutes. This movie flies by. I think it moves just a little too fast before it can give its characters time to really express that longing for something beyond such an enclosed and relatively provincial space, particularly maybe from the Kirsten Dunst character and even the Elle Fanning character. But despite that, I think this movie is just so rich. I mean, particularly the cinematography by a guy, I'm going to butcher his name, but it's by a cinematographer who shot a handful of movies named Philippe Lesueur, who, kind of like one of our favorite cinematographers, Gordon Willis, has no fear whatsoever of shadow and natural light. And I think he shot this movie perfectly.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. You know, she's taken a break from working with Lance Accord, who has shot Lost in Translation and I believe Marie Antoinette as well. And he did a lot of Spike Jonze's earlier work. But on the Marc Maron podcast, he just said, yeah, he's French. So I guess, you know, the French are great at everything in terms of the arts. And so it's beautiful. But then you also, her production designer, or art director, I think her name's Anne Ross, just creating this environment is I think they shot it in New Orleans, and there's already a gap that somebody mentioned that they show like Spanish moss, you know, like trees with the moss hanging down. And the story actually takes place in Virginia, and apparently there aren't trees like that are not native to Virginia. But Sofia Coppola didn't care. She just wanted to create this just sort of Southern Gothic atmosphere and botany be damned. But I loved it. I loved all the elements. I'm interested this was also a complaint from my wife, Meg, when we saw the movie in the theater. She's like, oh, my God, the ending was too fast. And I've heard that from other people, too. And I'm like, okay, well, what are the other scenarios? Like, take me through the other scenarios, all of which would have involved a different outcome or a delayed outcome. for me, this movie is like, it feels like a novella, you know, or a short story. And I love the fact that it's 90 minutes. It's breezy. You get from point A to point B. Everything that happens is motivated. Everything that happens is deserved. And I think that people that are complaining about the ending, and I don't know if that's your specific issue with it, the ending, you know, the guy deserves what happens to him, okay? He does. It's proven. It's proven very early on that this dude is not a good guy. After Nicole Kidman's character leaves the room, and he goes, and I'm like, okay, this dude's a dick. And from that moment on, but there are slow, quiet moments in this movie where I feel like it does feel like time is passing. We're letting it breathe, especially the parts where he sort of makes his way out into the garden and everything. So when I reflect on this movie, I don't feel like it was completely rushed. I feel like there was this feeling of, okay, he's taking time to recover, and here we are. But then it's like now everything has to come to a head. We get the big action where he's caught in one of the girls' bedrooms, that all sends everything into chaos. And I love the way that everything – I think, to me, this is my favorite Colin Farrell performance since Cassandra's Dream, especially when he's all pissed off after the amputation and running around with the gun, and he's just out of control but yet vulnerable and still – you know, then he's like apologetic. I thought Colin Farrell's awesome, and this to me is his best work since his underrated performance in Cassandra's Dream.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines in the movie is just one word. It's the part where everything is just kind of on cloud nine for the house. Everybody's getting along famously, and one of the characters is playing music either on a violin or a piano, and Elle Fanning says to the Colin Farrell character, "Isn't this such a great song?" And she says, "I even think it's kind of romantic," and he just turns to her and says, "Quite." Yeah. You know, that's why that was so great. And the ending, not so much for me, Graham. I like the ending fine. Everything that's supposed to happen in this movie happens. In story-wise, it all works. I think Coppola could have let it breathe just a little bit. And you're right. All of the performances are pretty exceptional in this, especially Colin Farrell. Nicole Kidman is really strong.
Yeah.
There's the mother of this household. And I know that I'm going to regret this. I know that we probably tread in the pro wrestling waters a little too often on this podcast. And I don't like using this terminology, but I'm talking to you, and I know I'll be speaking your language here in terms of how loosely you use it. But Kristen Dunst has an incredible heel turn late in this movie, complete with a costume change that made me laugh out loud in the theater. And I was the only person in the theater, so I could get away with more laughing out loud than usual.
Well, but, and that was all built up because earlier in the movie, Nicole Kidman, like, forces her to cover her shoulders, and so when she comes out, she's like, "I'm showing my damn shoulders."
But there's also, there's also, like, a black element to her new costume, too.
Yeah.
So she's, like, she's a bad guy now, you know? She's, like, the sensational Sherry to Colin Farrell's Macho King, you know? So, but also, speaking of turns, his is really gradual and pretty perfectly placed until he just has to go all in. And like you said, he kind of goes a little over the top. That's when I think things start moving a little too quickly, and I think Coppola seems a little – I think she seems a little too content to tie a bow on it as fast as she can. But it's funny – Once he's been amputated, like, it just all hell kind of breaks loose for the character.
I feel like everything he does and says is valid there. I mean, wouldn't you go completely insane if that had happened? And obviously in that era, you had a school mom amputating your leg. I mean, you'd be insane with rage. I just thought that everything he did was justified and motivated there.
Well, it was also motivated for her to amputate his leg because he was injured and she had to do what she had to do to save his life.
But also because he didn't go to her room.
Right. But you hear later on too him say, like, "I'd rather be dead than basically an amputee."
I'm no longer a man.
So good.
But look, like,
the movie is an entertainment. It's an entertainment.
This man, that, and gosh, that's why I'm just so you know, proud of Sofia Coppola because everybody views her as this, like, oh, artsy, introspective, you know, tell us who we are, Sofia.
Yeah, you it's know, like a genre film.
She made a badass, fun movie, you know? I mean, that moment with Nicole Kidman where she goes, get the saw.
she got blood on her clothes.
Yeah, and the anatomy book.
Give me the anatomy book is a great line.
Man, that's just like a classic horror moment. It's great.
Oh, and when the little girl says he likes the mushrooms, you know, holy crap.
This movie's fun. It's fun because he deserves it. It's a moral tale. It's a fable. It is a hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, you know? And sometimes we need, like, simple stories. Just because we've heard them all before doesn't mean we need to stop telling these simple fables.
A huge perk with this movie is that it kind of helps grow the still very small list of Civil War movies told from the perspective of women.
Yeah.
These stories that are far too undertold, even in 2017. And, you know, hopefully it helps to start a trend, because aside from this, we're still kind of stuck with Gone with the Wind, which is obviously one of the greatest movies ever, and, like, Cold Mountain, which Nicole Kidman. And then from that point on, you're going to have to start making pretty strong cases for what qualifies as a women's perspective Civil War movie. So, and those stories are incredibly important. So that movie has value in that respect. And look, aside from these very, very minor pace and story problems, it doesn't make it any less aesthetically pleasing. Like I said, the cinematography is fantastic. You mentioned the locations, the sets, the costumes are amazing. I know that this was mostly shot right outside New Orleans. I think she uses the natural setting pretty perfectly. There are all these really excellent, like, exterior framings, frame shots of the house with trees and fog and other just really nice touches. And just, like, from just strictly, like, looking at her filmography, I wouldn't put it up there yet with Lost in Translation or even Marie Antoinette, but it's squarely, it's just right now after my first watch, it's squarely right there with Somewhere and Virgin Suicides on that just next rung just below those two, which I think are just elite for her. But it's well above the Bling Ring.
Well, one thing that I think the Bling Ring's underrated, love about this movie is that while, you know, it is this sort of girl power, you know, here's what happens when you mess with women, moral tales, it also, in the build-up to that, shows the vulnerabilities and even weaknesses of these female characters just from the mere presence of a man, shows how it plays on their insecurities, how it incites jealousy, how it makes them very superficial, and how it makes them turn on each other and will just slight each other. I love that aspect of it. It also does the same thing for Colin Farrell's character, this wounded soldier. You know, he's a coward. He wants to be protected by these women. And, you know, he's like, he basically asks for a job as the full-time gardener, you know, so that he can, you know, anything he can do to stop from having to go outside the gates of this boarding school. You know, he's willing to do anything. He's just a weak coward, unwilling to face the music. So I think that there's a lot of depth here in terms of with all the characters, especially all the women. You know, the dynamics between them, the sly looks, the little comments, the body language, the way that they move around, all of which is being influenced by the presence of this guy, is just masterfully handled by Coppola, you know, and orchestrated by her. So the movie is it's a fun, as Woody Allen would say, kind of a dessert type of a movie that, you know, is very tight and enjoyable. But I think there is depth there, and there's substance there that sort of speaks to, you know, the nature of male and female and the dynamic that occurs between the two. So there's depth there, but at the end of the day, it's just a really entertaining, fun ride.
Yeah, it gives new meaning to the term finishing school too, I would say. And you're right. It's like, on the whole, a really, really pleasant experience. And it's just so fun to see a filmmaker like Sofia Coppola flex her muscle, her creative muscle. You know, like I said, whenever she makes a new movie, it's a must see. And You know, on the whole, I think the remake thing is still kind of puzzling why someone with such a rich original voice would bother with existing material, but it inspired her. She wanted to bring a new perspective to it. And you know, at times, though, like it did feel kind of like an exercise similar to what we've sometimes seen with Steven Soderbergh, who can make great movies just for the hell of it. The same is obviously true for Sofia Coppola. I just hope she got the remake out of her system and can move on with something new.
I think that, okay, the remake, the movie, The Beguiled, I'm sorry, you know, I'd never heard of it, and I know who Don Siegel is. I had never really, I'm sure I had skimmed over it while looking at Clint Eastwood and Don Siegel's filmographies, but I'd never heard of it. It did not occur to me. I'd never seen it. It had never been recommended to me by anyone, and, you know, she told the story on the Marc Maron podcast that, like, her production designer said, hey, you should remake The Beguiled. And she was like, oh, really? And she listened to her and, like, took a look at it and then looked at the source material and said, you know, now after seeing the movie and looking at the source material, there's, like, this other version of the story that I want to do.
Right.
And, look, right. I mean, look at Stanley Kubrick. Like, every movie that he made was based on a novel. You know, I mean, I know that you're anti-basing things on existing properties, but, like, you're just telling stories and using cinema to tell a story in a different way. And I don't begrudge for that at all.
No. And it kind of reminds me of True Grit in a way. Like, I mean, if you're going to remake something, do it well. And the Coen brothers obviously did it well, but I think that Sofia Coppola sort of one-upped them in that regard in bringing a wholly fresh perspective to this story. And I mean, she obviously is going to direct the movie much differently than Don Siegel would have in 1971, and it's still exciting. And you're right, like it's interesting. The dynamics of what's going on character wise are really interesting, and thematically too. I mean, there's all sorts of like empowerment going on in this movie from top to bottom with all of the characters, in terms of how Nicole Kidman's motherly character runs her school and lessons that she teaches her students and the women within the house. Even when Kirsten Dunst makes the turn, it's sort of a moment of rare empowerment for her, where she feels like she's acting independently, and she has sort of this glimmer of hope in terms of getting out of this place and moving on. And with the Elle Fanning character, it's coming of age for her, where she's sort of like coming to grips with her sexuality, something she can't, the feelings she can't really control. So she's exploring that in this only way she kind of knows how at this point, in these people learning how to sort of break the rules that the Nicole Kidman character has really sort of carefully and delicately put in place for their own protection, especially in the midst of wartime, where men are a threat. You know, these women are vulnerable to men as they're alone, and as the enemy can just sort of wander and drift onto their land and their existence, and can really shake things up. And that, more often than not, I'm sure, goes poorly for women, especially back in the Civil War era. So it's amazing to see a story like this where women take matters into their own hands and shows how strong they are and how strong that they were. And these characters are just so rich for that reason.
Absolutely. It's definitely a girl power movie. And if Sofia Coppola has a consistent theme, that's it. So it would be interesting to see Sofia Coppola completely step away from that. I'm not saying she should, you know, like, write what you know, that works, but it would be really interesting for her to make a movie about just, I mean, somewhere is about a man, but, you know, I wouldn't say that. That's not exactly what I'm talking about here, but she gets it. She's been building this for a long time, ever since Virgin Suicides. I mean, there's definitely a connection there. I want to go back and look at that, because that's about like a big group of girls sort of like this. And I want to go back and like study that to see if there are like similar dynamics among that group. But man, you know, I'm pumped to see what she does next. Hopefully she's in that mode where she's like, I want to do another one. I want to do another one. And that, regarding remakes real quick, it's like, my take on remakes is, you know, don't remake something that is, you know, perfect or there's no reason to remake it, like Ghostbusters. You know, don't do it. Remake something, and don't remake a movie that, even though it may have not been that successful, maybe it's a cult classic, you know, but remake a movie that like actually could have been improved, that where you like the idea of it, but it could have been better. And, you know, and I think that's what happened here. I think she was like, that's a really cool concept. I might not be that crazy about the Don Siegel version. And apparently not that many people are, because nobody really talks about it. I'm sure some people do. I'm sure there's like Beguiled fan club, but you know, if you see something that where it's been, somebody's taking a stab at it and it like didn't really make that big of an impact, who cares? Try again. Like, I think that's fine. But I say this as I'm about to go watch the, you know, Planet of the Apes remake, where that movie was pretty good and definitely a cult classic and definitely successful. But yet, you know, but I, you know, I guess there are exceptions to that rule if you're going to do it really well.
Yep, and Sofia Coppola obviously did it really well. So I got no complaints. You know, like, I mean, it's a new Sofia Coppola movie. It's really good. I'm ready for the next thing now, you know? Like, it's just, it's a treat. It's a treat. Whenever she makes a movie, it's an even bigger treat when it's really good.
Absolutely.
For Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.